This is Amarins.
Hi, everybody. This is Arthur, and welcome to episode 26 of my podcast. It's Tuesday, July 17, 2007. Today's episode is entitled Good and Bad, because up until now I've been talking mostly about the good things about New Zealand, and of course I think there are a lot of good things, so I thought maybe I should balance it by talking about some things that are not so good. The only trouble is that there really aren't that many that, to me, are even worth mentioning. At most, there's some minor irritations here and there, but in general I'm pretty pleased with the way things are. Obviously not just my personal life I'm talking here, but about the way the country's being run, and about the way society is, and all those sorts of things. Mostly the things I would complain about are the sorts of things that people would complain about anywhere, like the way other people drive, for instance. I was actually quite surprised that in my last podcast I ended up not having to swear at other drivers. They all seemed to be more or less behaving themselves, or maybe I just am so used to bad behavior I didn't notice it. I don't know, but there's certainly nothing really annoying to comment on. So there really isn't any one thing about New Zealand that I would change if I could, apart from little bits and pieces. For instance, there is a streak I suppose it's generally true in New Zealand, but certainly in the Auckland region, where people basically go, it's like they go, oh, no, and they just dismiss things out of hand. Case in point, when New Zealand won the hosting rights to the 2011 Rugby World Cup, there was a proposal to build a new national stadium on the waterfront in Auckland Harbour, not in it. Anyway, the chorus of opposition was loud and deafening from all these people sounding like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh, and just, oh, poo-poo, this is terrible, oh, no, we mustn't do that, oh, what a waste of money, and on and on, on and on and on. Well, there's an area of Auckland City that is known as Tank Farm because it has large tanks that were used, I think originally for storing fuel, but by and large now they're used for storing cooking oil. And that land is going to be coming up for redevelopment fairly soon as the leases expire and Auckland City takes it back. It's going to be redeveloped. And they want to put an iconic building or structure somewhere on that bit of land. It'll be visible from the Harbour Bridge. And I can just see already the sorts of things that people are going to be saying. They're not going to want to spend money on this. And, oh, we can't do that. It's the same sort of attitude that almost derailed the Sydney Opera House before it was built. But they persevered and they built it anyway, and now, of course, it's a world icon. I don't think that we're going to get anything that iconic in this area called Tank Farm, just because there's too many people who are just too negative and they don't want to do anything like that. So I suppose if there were only one thing I could change about New Zealand, it would be to turn off the negativity that some people seem to have. And it's a really curious thing because the vast majority of people are optimistic. And they have an enthusiasm and an interest and a curiosity about a lot of different things, about other people in the world or other people around them, you know, visitors and so on, tourists. And yet there is this streak of negativity that still permeates here and there. Now, my suspicion, and it's only my personal opinion, I might be completely wrong about this, but my suspicion is that it comes mostly from the more elderly sector of the community, and particularly those who emigrated from the UK. Now, I may be wrong about that. It could just be that those are the voices that I hear on talkback radio all the time, but that's what it seems like to me. Now, there is a stubborn streak in some people on the right-hand side of the political spectrum. They don't want to spend public money on much of anything, even though the irony is that New Zealand reached its zenith of being a protectionist, really Stalinist state under a right-wing prime minister named Robert Muldoon. And in future episodes, I hope to be able to talk a little bit more about what life was like in those years. But that's really the only thing I could think of that I would change, because New Zealand is a good place to live. It's a decent society. It's a tolerant society. People aren't really interested in telling anyone else what to do or how to live their lives. They just want to be left alone to get on with their own lives, which seems to me to be fair enough. So there's not really that much I could complain about. There is, however, one thing, and that would be the news media. Now, I have to say first and foremost that the news media in New Zealand is better than you will find in some places, and I'm not picking on America in general, because some American news media is outstanding, and some of it is utter shit, like Fox News, for instance, which couldn't tell a story if its life depended on it, or the Washington Times, which is basically a black and white comic book. However, there's a lot of media in New Zealand, in the United States, which is also very good. So it's not about comparing and contrasting New Zealand media with American media and all that, because There's good and bad in America, there's good and bad in New Zealand. My complaint is with the laziness and sloppiness of the news journalists in New Zealand, who sometimes have absolutely no historic context. They report on a story not realizing that 5 years ago there was something else that went on about this same story. And it's not entirely their fault. A lot of times it's got to do with the editors not knowing enough. A lot of times it's got to do with not enough resource, not enough reporters, for instance, and in the amount of time that they've got to create their stories, they just don't have the time to do the background research. And I understand all of that, but I don't think that excuses it. And I also don't think it excuses the country's largest newspaper launching crusades. I'm talking about the New Zealand Herald, which is published out of Auckland. Over the weekend, on their website, they actually might have been yesterday's edition, they had a little thing where it was headlined, and I was going to blog about this. Actually, I did blog about this, I'll take it back, on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, where they had said that Labour was desperate to prevent this right-wing nutcase named John Banks from being elected mayor. Now, he was elected mayor before. He was the worst thing that happened to Auckland. He's a right-wing, he's extreme right-wing, he's divisive, he is arrogant, he is know-it-all, he's everything bad imagine. And he was defeated in the last mayoral election. Well, the Herald ran the story that said the Labour was desperate to keep him out. And the reason they were supposedly desperate was because Labour wants to win another term in government, which is understandable. And the reasoning went that if John Banks is a right-winger, if he were mayor of Auckland, they would have trouble winning Auckland. And that is, of course, absolute nonsense. When Banks was mayor last time, Labour won and would have won with Auckland votes. So whoever is mayor is irrelevant to who wins a national election. They just don't have that kind of power or influence. Well, it turns out that the person who said that Labour was desperate was a former Banks aide, which means that he was bust, which means that he was talking nonsense. Well, today, the New Zealand Herald ran a poll on their website, which asks who people want to be the next mayor. Now, the choices were this right-wing guy, John Banks, the current mayor, Dick Hubbard, a pornographer by the name of Steve Crow, and some guy named John Hinchcliffe, who I've never heard of before, but he's also running for mayor. Now, I'm just going to read the first few sentences of the story, and I'm quoting directly, reading directly. John Banks could be donning the Auckland City mayoral chains again this year, according to the nzherald.co.nz poll. With more than 2,000 votes cast by lunchtime today, Mr. Banks was polling at 55%, while the incumbent Dick Hubbard was in second place at 26%. Mr. Hubbard, a successful businessman, defeated Mr. Banks in the last mayoral election in 2004. The other two candidates have publicly expressed an interest in running this time, blah, 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 and so forth and so on. And then it rings up Mr. Banks, and he quotes him as saying, "I'm flattered, that made my day," he said, and then gives him a chance to make his political points. At the very end of the story, it says, with an asterisk, "The poll does not claim to be scientific, but only allows one vote per computer. By 12:38 p.m., 2,256 votes had been cast." Now let me read that again. The poll does not claim to be scientific. So why is the New Zealand Herald, the country's biggest newspaper, reporting that as if it is news, as if, in fact, it is fact, as if it has any meaning whatsoever? I am at a loss to understand it, except, maybe the New Zealand Herald wants John Banks to be mayor. It sure looks that way, considering that they've just run the story claiming that Labour would be desperate to keep Banks out, and then they run a story touting some meaningless, self-selecting poll. Perhaps, just maybe, the New Zealand Herald is pushing to have John Banks the next mayor. Now, when I first arrived in New Zealand, the mayor was this man named Les Mills, who was an Olympic athlete in his day and founded a chain of gym clubs or whatever in Auckland. And he was conservative. He opposed the hero parade. He used to say really stupid things. He was succeeded by a woman named Christine Fletcher, who was another conservative politician. She was a National Party MP. And she was basically kind of useless. She, in turn, was succeeded by John Banks. All of these people had one term. And as I said, John Banks is an arrogant, conservative, far-right conservative nut, in my opinion. And what I said when I first arrived, when Les Mills was mayor, that Auckland City deserved better than somebody like that, because he had a very narrow interest. He didn't understand that Auckland City was a very diverse place. Christine Fletcher did understand that to some extent. She just wasn't a very good mayor. John Banks knew that Auckland City was a diverse place, but he didn't care. So when I say that the New Zealand Herald seems to be pushing John Banks into the mayoralty, you can see why I might have some concerns about that. And if I once said that Auckland City deserved a better mayor than Les Mills, maybe it deserves a better paper than the New Zealand Herald. Anyway, that's what I think about that. Also in the news today, the New Zealand Parliament has begun streaming their coverage of their sittings over the internet. Now, this is important only because it hasn't been available up until now. There's no TV channel that carries parliamentary proceedings. It was possible to watch Question Time, which is when the Prime Minister and her cabinet ministers are queried by other members of Parliament. It was possible to watch that on Sky News, which is basically an Australian news channel, but they would broadcast that. And you could listen to it on Radio New Zealand or watch it on the TVNZ website. The new parliamentary coverage will be carried by Parliament's own web service, and you can get to it at parliament, that's how you spell it, parliament.govt.nz. And somewhere on there there'll be something to link if you want to watch it. The schedule basically is that from 2 p.m. till roughly 3 p.m. is Question Time, and then from 3 p.m. to around 6, I think it is, or 6, yes, something like that, is the business of the day. Then they take a dinner break, then they come back, and then they adjourn at 10 p.m. Now, Parliament only meets on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. All of this, of course, is New Zealand time, obviously. But if you're interested in seeing how a parliamentary democracy works, you can log onto the web and see for yourself. There is some talk that they might eventually include coverage of select committees, but that may or may not end up happening. And they do hope eventually to have it broadcast on television, but that may or may not happen either. There's a new digital free-to-air platform called Freeview, which is just launched, and they're hoping that perhaps early next year that there might be a channel that could be added to carry the parliamentary proceedings. Now, most of the time, I suspect that this would be deadly dull. I mean, it just can't be that much that's interesting. But when there's a hotly contested bill that's being considered, it could be very interesting. And at the very least, it would make people better informed about what their government is doing. So I think it's a good thing. I think now I'm just going to go on to the comments, partly because I've had enough of ranting and so on. And I'm going to begin by going all the way back to episode 19, because there was a recent comment on that. And I've said before, you know, people should feel free to comment on earlier episodes if they want, and because I get an email notification when that happens, so it's not like I have to sit and check every single one. But it was from Condo Blogger, who said, "So glad I finally got around to listening to this show. So much fun. I laughed out loud when Nigel complained about not getting the sci-fi channel. Cool that he's a sci-fi guy. Now I know, or at least I have a very good guess, where your cat got a name. Or maybe that is her symbiont's name. I didn't realize that Nigel was Maori, or at least partly so. Yet another cool layer of the onion peels away." Not sure I would have used the word onion there, but and he goes on in another comment. He says, "This is what happens when you comment before listening to the whole show. I had to come back and ask about making plans for Nigel. Who is it? What a great song to end the show with." And I said, "Glad you enjoyed this one, CB. We'll be doing another one before too long, I hope. Yes, our cat, Curzon Dax, is a Star Trek name. Other cats among friends and family have had similar names. One was called Odo. He died. Sisko and Martok, who was our cat's best friend until he ran away. Actually, you could say our dog's name, Jake, is influenced by Deep Space Nine, too. Jake Sisko is Captain Sisko's son. In his case, though, it's a bit more complicated than that. And I don't really want to spend a whole lot of time talking about Jake's name, but the gist of it is that because he was part poodle, we were originally kidding that we should call him Jacques, you know, like French poodle and all that. And Jacques was a bit too, not butch enough for a boy dog, so we were going to call him Jake. Moving on now to episode 24. Archer said, "I hope you made it through the storm." This was called Stormy, and this is the one I recorded when the storms were brewing. And you also may have detected there was a bit of funniness in my voice. I wasn't feeling all that well that night and had a bit of a scratchy throat, which may have come through. Anyway, Archer said, "I hope you made it through the storms without issue. Walt had some great questions for you, and your answers were enlightening." Oh, and I commented first again. And I said, Walt had excellent questions, and they certainly made me think. I'm glad you found my answers enlightening. I know I shared some things I haven't before. I hope my answers did the questions justice. And I don't know if I did or not. Walt, I certainly hope I answered your questions. I tried to think a little bit more laterally in some of them, I suppose. But as I say, I did share some things I haven't talked about before. Calvin said, I saw there was one comment, and I was almost certain it had to be Archer. I think that's so weird that they don't call drugs by the same names. That is something I never would have thought about, never would have expected. And look at you, Arthur, all pod safe. That's too bad about the storm damage to your house. Maybe that whole survival kit isn't such a bad idea. It's funny, but at 9 years old, I had a very different feelings about firemen. Sigh, firemen. And I said, the bit about the drug name surprised me, too. What we're talking about there is that we have paracetamol, which in America is called acetaminophen, and I couldn't originally find aspirin. It was called a brand name, Disprin. Nowadays, you can actually get aspirin. I noticed when I was at the grocery store the other day, a lot of it is the low-dose aspirin, you know, like the 5 milligrams or whatever it is to ward off heart disease, but you can get stronger aspirin as well now. But there are a lot of other things that are called by other names, and sometimes I have to stop and think of what they are. For example, green peppers are called capsicums. Sorry, stop and think. They're called capsicums. And whereas I was just used to one thing called zucchini, they have different names depending on how big they are. The big, huge ones are called marrow. And then there's zucchini and there's courgette. Yeah, that's right. Stop and think. That's true, too. It goes courgette, zucchini, and marrow, from biggest to smallest. And also, actually, lamb has different grades depending on how old it is. Lamb, hoggut, and mutton. But this is something else I hadn't encountered when I was in America. But anyway, I go on. The whole PodSafe thing is just because it's easier than sticking to fair use. Now, what I've done in the past is I've generally kept my use of ordinary music to 30 to 45 seconds because I consider that fair use, particularly if I've changed it in some way, like doing a mashup or what have you, just altering it, it becomes something different. And I consider 45 seconds max to be within the realm of fair use, especially because I'm not trying to claim it's mine or anything. But it is easier just to use PodSafe because then you don't have to worry about anything like that. You just play it and you're done with it. But that doesn't mean I'm going to only do PodSafe. And until I get a system where I can do some of my own things, mix my own stuff, I may end up using a bit of it. But I hope eventually to use less of it or to get better stuff. What I would really like to do, if I could do anything in the world, it would be to include music by New Zealand artists or by gay and lesbian artists, or ideally gay and lesbian New Zealand artists. But so far I've had trouble finding such people in the PodSafe world. I'm sure that they must be out there, or that there would be gay or New Zealand artists who would like to have their music played so they can share it. But I haven't been able to be looking beyond the realms of the established PodSafe channels. So if anybody knows of anybody who meets that description, who's either a gay or lesbian composer or a New Zealand composer, by all means, send them my way. I said, at 9, my reaction was to the siren, not the fireman. Although for me, any interest in them arrived at an older age. At 9, I don't remember being interested in much of anything, to be honest, but oh well, that's just the way it is. And over on the Podomatic site, I had a comment from Eric West from The Beat San Francisco, and he said, Hello Arthur, I loved your last show, but I tend to love them all. Your discussion on living in New Zealand as opposed to the U.S. was a great one, and got me thinking about why I live here in San Francisco as opposed to London, as I could, or some other country, and I still come back to the fact that I have lived all over the world, and the day we got to San Francisco, I knew that I would be here till the day I die. I've moved away a number of times, New York, London, Miami, but I always come back, and now I know better and will stay here forever. Thanks for the shows and keep them coming. It's always great to hear from someone else who has left the nest area of where they were born. And I said, thanks for the kind words. I love San Francisco too. If I hadn't met Nigel and moved here, I may have moved there. And actually, I've got a story about San Francisco. I haven't told this one before either. Some months before I first came to New Zealand, I think it was about May of 1995, if I remember correctly, or thereabouts, I went and visited San Francisco. It was the first time I'd ever been there, and I met a friend of mine. It was just a friend, I hasten to add, but who I had actually met through America Online. And we'd struck up a friendship, and I came and visited, and he showed me San Francisco and took me up to Napa Valley and stuff. So it was a good time. But I decided to send an email postcard out, and it was just a generic thing. It was nothing unusual, just saying basically what I was doing is all it was. I mean, I still get ones like that from friends that I know when they go on holiday. Now, when I sent it, I intended to send it through the blind carbon copy method, and I must have screwed it up, because I sent it off, and Nigel got his, and then he saw all these other names, and he suddenly thought, oh, maybe I'm reading into this. Maybe there's really not this connection that I thought was there. And because he saw all these other names, and he's, you know. So he pulled back. Meanwhile, I was blissfully unaware of that going on, and finished the trip, went back to Chicago, and I was emailing Nigel like usual, and I wasn't getting any replies. I thought, well, that's odd. And I thought, what is going on? So I finally sent him an email saying, where has Nigel gone? And he finally emailed back, and he was kind of cool, I thought, but I was persistent, and then eventually he warmed up again, and things got back on track. But the thing is that because I sent that email postcard, that mass postcard, I very nearly derailed everything, quite innocently, mind you, but nevertheless, I very nearly derailed the whole thing just because I went to San Francisco, is what it amounts to. So it just goes to show that I suppose communication is the key to everything, because eventually we went past that. And I can't remember now, but I don't think he told me about that until after I was already here. He may have told me about it before, I can't remember, but I felt terrible when he told me. And the only reason I didn't send him anything personal was because I was borrowing my friend's computer. And in those days, of course, you had to pay by the minute, practically. And I really didn't want to use a lot of his computer time. And so I didn't send him a personal one. And in retrospect, I do regret that. Although I did send him a printed postcard, as I recall. So I should get points for that anyway. But nevertheless, we got through it. Anyway, I went on. In the weeks ahead, I plan to speak to others who have left the nest, which should make for some interesting podcasts. And I don't want to say any more about that, anything more about that, but I have been talking with some other folk about being on the podcast, people who either expats or have some connection to those sorts of things, and also some other people who I just think will add an interesting perspective. So that's coming up in weeks ahead. Now that I've got the digital recorder, I can do those sorts of things. Moving on now to episode 25. Which was cleanup, and that, of course, was my car cast, you may recall. Larkin said, why wasn't the tree removal company responsible for the additional damages they did to your home? They should have had the proper equipment and knowledge to remove it safely without inflicting additional damage to your home, or is that a totally American way to view the world? You'll have to let us know what you thought of Michael Tolliver Lives. I thought it was very good overall, but a little slow in the middle and just a bit short. It left me wanting more. It's by far his most graphic book when it comes to sex. I have a good friend that I lent all my Tales of the City books to, and I'm sure I'm going to have to explain a few things to her after she reads it. Like that little brown bottle in Michael's fridge in from the original series. After her second time reading them, she finally asked what the little bottle was for. I think you should have a podcast on puppy training. I'm sure it would be a major hit. As you talked about issues that you had with Sive, I could totally relate with the same issue we have with our dogs. And I said, I agree with you about the tree thing. I turned it over to the loss assessor, who's working as the project manager for the whole thing. It's up to them to sort it out. And that's basically what it is. The loss assessor doesn't just assess the loss. He also coordinates the repairs and all those sorts of things. And it really has nothing to do with me. It's between him and the subcontractors and the insurance company and all that. I don't have to organize anybody to fix the plastering, and I don't have to pay for it directly, or actually even indirectly. So it's basically out of my hands. I just thought it was a bit odd, the response, oh, well, we try to avoid breaking the window. This still makes me chuckle a bit, but anyway, the loss assessor has noted it, and he's going to get it fixed. Although, when I talked to him yesterday, he said that it may be a while before the builder gets around here, because they're quite busy, and it's not just with storm-related repairs. They're also ordinary building issues. It's very difficult to get tradespeople to do things because they're so busy with building. Anyway, I go on. You know, I probably shouldn't admit this, but I only read the first three Tales books. I think I went to read the others before Michael Tolliver Lives. Before reading Michael Tolliver Lives. It sounds funny otherwise. Anyway, Nigel's chomping at the bit to start it, but he's being very good and finishing the book he was reading first. Such restraint. And I'm not sure I could have done that in his position. Anyway. And then it says, I'm sure I'll mention more puppy training as time goes on. I won't be able to stop myself. And, of course, that's the thing about when you've got a puppy, you end up talking about them. You just can't help yourself. He's sleeping in my lap at the moment, actually. He's squirming a little bit. Next up, Archer said, good car cast. Your dog is your child, and it is expected that you do all the things for him like you'd be raising a child. Nothing odd about that. Of course, what he's talking about is, I was talking about the puppy school and all that, and saying that it sounded really gay. But anyway. Says, I want to get Michael Tolliver Lives, too. I've read the whole series and need to read that one as well. Too bad you don't have a specific gay bookstore, but these days you don't really need one. You can get all the books you want online. I saw Who Killed the Electric Car just recently. Great documentary about how the government and oil companies ruined the electric car or any chance for better fuel-efficient cars. Sorry we missed you on the group show, but dealing with the insurance is more important. Thanks for joining the discussion in the comments section. I love hearing your side of it. I hope everything works out with the insurance and the house gets fixed with no problems. And I said, yeah, Jake is like a child, literally in some ways, but I do know that he's a dog and has dog needs. And what I mean by sometimes literally is there are times when he's like a human infant in terms of his needs and the kinds of attention that he requires. But then there's other times he's more like a toddler. So it's kind of an odd difference between dog puppies and human puppies. Yes, I'm being facetious by using that phrase. But there are times when he is a bit like a human. And then I go on. What I liked about a gay bookstore was the special events they hold, author appearances, for example. But you're right, in the age of the interwebs, we don't really need bookstores anymore, but I still miss them. And considering you guys were mostly talking about the U.S. Big Brother, I wouldn't have had much to say on the group show, probably, so maybe things worked out for the best for everyone. And actually, it's an interesting thing about that. We in New Zealand have never gotten the U.S. Big Brother. We haven't had any of them. But we did used to get the Australian version of Big Brother. And we got it the first several years of it, although we haven't gotten for the past maybe two or three or so. I'm not really sure. Not even highlights. But the Big Brother that was shown here was always shown on free-to-air television. And they would play the... I don't even remember what it was called now, but it was like Big Brother After Dark, but it was called something else. And they used to show that at, I think, about 10:30 or 11 at night, well into adults-only time. And the thing about the Australian version is they showed a lot of nudity, full frontal nudity. Boys and girls, didn't matter, the whole thing. And they had cameras posed? They had cameras in the shower area. And in the last Big Brother they showed, they had them facing the toilet as well, although... They rigged up some sort of system so you couldn't actually see them doing the business, which was fine by me. But they didn't actually show that part on the television. A lot of that stuff was stuff you could watch on the website for Australian Big Brother. And but some of it they did show, and there was actually a DVD that they put out about Big Brother, which showed some of the naughty bits as well. I think it was Big Brother Uncovered or something like that. I wish I could remember because it's been quite a while now. But anyway, since I can't see U.S. Big Brother, I have no idea what anybody's on about, so maybe it's just as well. I'm going to come back to that in a second. I just want to go over to the Podomatic site where Eric West left a comment on this episode as well. And he said, thanks for the, as they say, shout-out from your show 25. Wow, how quickly we get show out. I have been loving your show since you started and have enjoyed hearing you when you were on Archer's show. And I said, thanks, Eric. I've downloaded your old shows and am now working my way through them. And I was thinking about that after I wrote it. I thought I'm a bit like Ramble Redhead because Tom, when he starts listening to a new podcast, likes to go all the way back to the beginning if he can and listen to them up to the current. But in Eric's case, I've got quite a few to get through, I think. But nevertheless, I particularly enjoyed his most recent one. He was talking about Scooter Libby as well, as a lot of people have, and quite understandably, I might add. But anyway. I forgot to mention I've added him to my parade of podcasts, which is on the right-hand side of my blog, amarins.blogspot.com. If you just go down to the T's for the, you'll find the Beat San Francisco. And he also has added himself to my Frepper map. He's my newest Frepper mapper. If you haven't put your pin on my Frepper map, by all means do so. So the last comment actually came in after I'd already posted my replies. So I'm just going to wing it. And it's from Tim Carmel, who said, "Great CarCast, Arthur. I'm glad you're loving and using your new portable recorder. Sorry to hear about the tree drama. I hate dealing with that kind of stuff. Or really, anything to do with contractors around the house. I'm always afraid I'm going to either get ripped off or they're going to screw something up while they are working. I'll have to check out the new Tales of the Cities book. I've read all the others, and the earlier books are my favorites." And I haven't responded to that in writing. If I think about it, I might do it later. But what the portable recorder he's talking about is that Eterol R1 that I bought some weeks back. It's not as fancy, or probably not as good even, as the one that Tim has, or Ramble Redhead, or Chef Mark, or people like that. But it is good quality. And I've been pretty impressed with it so far. The only problem I've had is that it records onto compact flash, which is now, I think, mostly used by professional-level digital cameras, but not much else. And the problem I have is the manual clearly says that not all compact flash cards are compatible with the machine, but it doesn't tell you which ones are or aren't, so you've got to wing it. So I obviously couldn't tell which ones were usable, so I bought one. I bought a 4-gigabyte card, which is compatible with the machine. It says that it can use up to 4-gigabyte compact flash, only the machine couldn't use it, couldn't recognize it. Well, Nigel, who is my technical advisor on most things, did some research and found that the problem seems to be with the modern compact flash is too fast for the Eterol to recognize. I don't know if it's any Eterol or just the R1. So I'm still using the original 64 kilobit? So no, it must be 64 megabyte compact flash card. And if I record an MP3, I can get up to 50 minutes, 50, which is pretty decent. I would just like to be able to record in WAV format so it's not compressed. But I can't get a card big enough in order to do that, so I haven't obviously done that. I'm still looking. I did actually ask Tim about this, if he knew anything about it, and he said that he'd used a brand called SanDisk, which was compatible, and I've been looking for SanDisk, but so far the only ones I've been able to find have been the ones that are at this fast speed, which is probably incompatible. So I'm at a bit of a loss at the moment, and I have to keep searching. Nigel's really good about stuff like that. I lose my patience pretty quickly when I'm trying to search for information on the interwebs, but Nigel looks diligently until he finds the information he's looking for, or a solution, or workaround, or whatever it is he's looking for. So that's why I call him my technical advisor, because he can sort things out after I've lost my patience. It's good to have somebody like that. Right, one last update before I go, and that is about the air conditioning. It seems to all be sorted now. They sent us a manual for the big, more technical-ish manual, I suppose it is. And so using that instructions, Nigel reset it. It turns out that there's a 2-degree differential that's standard when the system is installed. I have no idea why, but basically Nigel reset it to remove that differential, and now it's actually heating to the correct temperature. And it has made a world of difference because it's quite comfortable now. It's more comfortable, far more comfortable than we were under when we had the gas heat running. It's more of a constant warmth instead of a very cold and then suddenly hot and then cold and then hot again as the system would come on and off. Because this runs not constantly, but maybe a bit more often. It's certainly quieter than the gas system was. The fan runs at a slower speed, most of the time anyway, unless we turn it up. And it makes the whole house comfortable all the time. And it is, compared to the way it was last year, it is so much nicer. Now, we don't know how much it's going to cost yet, because we haven't gotten the first electricity bill since this was installed. The one we have gotten for this month is slightly higher than this month last year, but that would be because we were running the electric underfloor heating in the bathroom where Jake is sleeping to keep him warm. And originally we were running it around the clock when we first got him. After he got a little bit older, we put it back on a timer so it only runs during the night to keep more, which is obviously when you would need it more because it's colder then. And that's it for this episode. I'll be back on Friday with another one. Who knows what that one will be about? It'll be a surprise to us all. But by all means, leave a comment on my blog, amarins.blogspot.com, or send an email to me at amarins@yahoo.com. That's it for this Tuesday edition. I'll talk to you on Friday. Bye.